Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about a guide to buying edible insects. Yeah, they're out there. It's a whole new movement. From Tree Hugger, I'll show you what they're eating and what companies are doing. Also talking about connections with food, Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola has friends in important places, including the CDC. What does that mean? I'll give you the lowdown on that. And the FDA warns ovarian cancer tests are not reliable. And how x-rays cause cancer. And prescription drug abusers, there are 15 million of you. We're not talking about illicit drugs like marijuana, crack cocaine. We're talking about regular drugs. And a high-fat diet is linked to increased breast cancer and a lot more on health and healing. Then today, I don't have a guest because I want to deal with a lot more issues. To share an insight on why the major banks on Wall Street never get arrested, go to jail, or held accountable for crimes that you and I would be put away for life. Pam Martins and Russ Martins from the Wall Street on Parade. Fake accounts, fake money, fake courts, fake regulators. Also today from our audio clip, as part of this, we will have an important discussion with yesterday that will be played right now with Elizabeth Warren taking on the head of Wells Fargo Bank that was just caught in some massive fraud where they made billions of dollars and why nothing will happen. So I'm juxtaposing her condemnation, which is correct, but the fact that these are show trials. They'll get up there and they'll rail against someone for doing something wrong, but nothing happens because of it. So we're going to deal with that. Also today, I'm going to share a short clip from Richard Pryor, the comedian. When he was early in his career, he was on Bill Boggs, someone who I respect, was a friend, and he was did a daily show on Channel 5 in New York City. And he was interviewing Richard Pryor. And there are two statements in there that make a lot of sense. Let's see if you can nail those statements. Then we're going to hear from how Hillary Clinton became corrupt. This is an inside story. The story is from Dick Morris. He was Hillary and Bill Clinton's chief political advisor for 20 years. I do not personally care for Dick Morris, but since he was there at the inception and he saw and helped them through all of their different trials, I want to hear what he has to say about what she was like. Now, I interviewed a man in 1988. He was a man who was a part of the original four people around Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton in Arkansas. He gave me a lot of insights about how they operated and how it was Hillary, not Bill. Bill was kind of this goofy sex maniac that would only thought about sex and drugs. That's all I did. But Hillary was into power. And he went into great detail about how they manipulated everyone and everything to their advantage. I'm trying to reach him. If I get him on, that will really be an interesting insight. And then we're going to show you how, and this is really for Geraldo. The other night, Geraldo was on Bill O'Reilly, and there was this discussion about pay for play. And Geraldo kept saying, but show me any proof, a shred of proof, a scintilla of truth, a proof that anybody gave the Clintons money or directly or their foundation and they got something quid pro quo in return. Oh boy, does that open up a big door. A, either you haven't done your homework, Geraldo, or B, you don't want to in any way embarrass Hillary Clinton, or maybe some other motive I'm not aware of. So I'm going to share with you some very specific insights of how the Clintons used their power when the in Haiti, when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State and Bill Clinton was the head of their recovery efforts, to bring lots of money, $14 billion, but it didn't go to the Haitian people. Didn't go to improve their standard of living, to improve water, to improve housing, food, nothing. But it did go to help the Clintons, and people gave the Clintons money. So if you need absolute irrefutable proof, today you'll have it. And so then I'm going to deal with a lot of other issues, time permitting. Let's begin. This is from the Tree Hugger. Welcome to the exciting world of ethnomorphology. It's about people who are engaged in edible insects in various forms, from snack bites to protein powder to roasted whole. And it goes on to say that, well, the insects contain 70% protein, more calcium than milk, more iron than spinach, and 20 times the amount of B12 as beef. And one, quote, the one major roadblock is getting over our North American squeamishness at the thought of eating crickets, mealworms, grasshoppers, buffalo worms, locusts, and the like. Also, rhino beetles, black and yellow scorpions, and queen weaver ants. Fortunately, companies promoting this bug eating are devising a number of ways to sell products. And what they're doing is that they are, first, they're getting the insects, ones that are easy to get, like crickets and snack bites. These are from crickets, and then they make them into chips, and they dry them and add some seasoning, barbecue flavor, and sea salt, and then they got these chips. Or they're also, and they're, by the way, these are companies doing very well, and they're selling them based upon, if you don't want to eat meat anymore, well, insects are actually a form of meat, you can eat these. Interesting, because what will that do to the other predators, that like birds that live off those insects? When you start commercializing a part of nature, you have a moral responsibility to stand back and say, is this the right thing to do? Is this going to imbalance nature? Will this cause another species that is related to what we're making into food? Will it starve them? For example, global warming will cause many of the major coral reefs, including the Great Australian Barrier Coral Reef, to be bleached, meaning everything on it dies. Well, that's a problem because there are millions of fish of all kinds that eat completely their entire meal off the coral reef. So when those fish no longer have food, they die. The larger fish that eat them then die. When the Arctic waters begin to get too warm, krill and other very small fish die, and then the whales and dolphins that eat them, the killer whales, don't have their food supply. So there's a consequence to all this. When you tear down the forest in Borneo, and now you don't have the forest, the orangutans starve to death, and there are thousands, thousands of orangutans starving to death, so that they can plant palm oil trees. So one of the more conscious things we can do is stop before we do something and ask, is this the right thing to do? So think about it before you buy the crickets or the ants. Is this ecologically sustainable? Is it something that's healthy? Just ask yourself all the questions before you engage. Otherwise, we get caught into fads, and then one day the fad becomes everyday standard, just like fast foods. Talking about fast foods, this is from the Alliance for Natural Health. This is about more evidence that this government agency, the CDC, has been bought and paid for by Coca-Cola. Now, we've discussed, and I've written about, produced films on, the fast food industry and what it does, how corrupt it is. Here's what they're saying. a high-ranking official at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, has resigned after extensive ties to Coca-Cola were exposed. The director of the Division for Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention was helping Coca-Cola influence the World Health Organization, which has published new guidelines on sugar consumption that were unwelcome to the beverage industry. Now it appears Coca-Cola has ties to another CDC official, Michael Pratt, Senior Advisor for Global Health in the National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion. And it goes on to say that Pratt has a history of conducting and promoting research funded by Coca-Cola and works closely with a beverage industry front group, the International Life Science Institute, and along with Pepsi-Cola, Dr. Pepper, Snapple, and dozens of other big food companies that support International Life Sciences, which is just, as you can see, if they're getting all their money to do their research, what's the likelihood of that research being objective? Pratt is the scientific advisor to this scientific group, serves on the Committee on Energy Balance and Active Lifestyle. Now, anytime you see words like energy balance, that means sugar. How much sugar your body is consuming. Then they try to use the excuse, well, it's not sugar that's the problem, it's a lack of exercise. No, it is both. It is the sugar in the diet and a lack of exercise. But even if you were to exercise regularly and took sugar, it does not mean that the sugar wouldn't cause all kinds of problems, including cancer and heart disease and clogging the arteries. Anyhow, I'm glad that they exposed it. So now, just one more reason not to trust anything coming out of the CDC. Also, screening tests for ovarian cancer are not reliable and should not be used. So says the Food and Drug Administration, quote, despite extensive research and published studies, there are currently no screening tests for ovarian cancer that are sensitive enough to reliably screen for ovarian cancer without a high number of inaccurate results. So for the women out there, my suggestion is that you not use a worthless test. It's not reliable. And I am not one who supports the fact that they're trying to market DNA testing. And let's just think, well, if you have BRCA1 or BRCA2 genetic mutations, then you're going to end up with breast cancer, ovarian cancer, both. It's not true. There is no hard science on that. And also, that takes out of the picture all that we've seen that you can do by changing your diet to a healthier diet, and in the process, you change the genes. Therefore, the gene is a healthy gene instead of a sick gene. Calcium and vitamin D can improve stroke recovery. This is published in the International Journal of Clinical Practice, and it showed that if you're taking calcium at 600 units a day, followed by a monthly dose of 60,000 units of vitamin D, and 1,000 milligrams then daily for 6 months of vitamin calcium, you will lessen your likelihood of having another stroke. Well, why not just take all this to begin with? So I suggest you take 2 to 5,000 units of vitamin D3 a day and anywhere between 800 to 1,000 milligrams of calcium and magnesium in equal amounts per day. That can help prevent a stroke or a heart attack. Believe it or not, they've just confirmed, just now, how x-rays cause cancer. This is phenomenal because 40 years ago, on one of my first broadcasts on non-commercial radio, back in 1976, Dr. John Goffman, MD, PhD, and the world's leading scientist on the dangers of radiation, stated there is no such thing as a safe dose of radiation, and you create these very severe hydroxyl free radicals, which are more damaging than a normal free radical by enormous measure, and that sooner or later in your lifetime, you will develop cancer from any x-ray that you had earlier on in your life if you live long enough. So he said this idea of doing X-rays for dentistry or X-rays for chiropractic or X-rays as part of a regular exam, this is nonsense and shouldn't be done. An X-ray should only be done because there's no other medical way of determining the extent of disease were damaged in the body. Then I ask him, well, based upon what we know about antioxidants, shouldn't we be flooding the body with antioxidants prior to getting our x-rays and right immediately after the x-ray for about a month, including any intravenous if we're getting a lot of x-rays? And he agreed. Here's what they're now discovering. This is from the Sanger Institute. This was published in Nature Communications, and it reveals how x-rays and other forms of ionizing radiation can damage the DNA and cause cancer. This was done at Curtin University. And they found that what's really happening is that you are creating an inability of the cell, the DNA, to rejuvenate itself, to repair. And when enough of these cells have been damaged by the free radicals, then in time that cell can become cancerous. So I cannot believe that they have not known this for a long time, and yet they're saying this is a brand new study showing for the first time. We have had thousands and thousands of studies on radiation and how it causes damage and how it causes mutations. In fact, we just had a study that showed over 50% of all chemotherapy patients or people treated with chemotherapy died from the chemotherapy, not the cancer. It was the chemotherapy. Well, we could also show that people die from the radiation-induced immune dysfunction or die from cancer that comes from the radiation. It happens all the time. So the takeaway message is, yes, you're going to damage your DNA. But if you absolutely positively need an x-ray or radiation, then you should prepare your body by flooding it with antioxidants and helping protect from the free radical damage to the degree that you can. And finally, from Reuters, the number of Americans who admit abusing prescription drugs is over 15 million. Now, that's admitted. That doesn't mean how many have actually abused it. You could probably double that. And the primary ones they're abusing are the opiates. Those are the pain relievers like OxyContin, Vicodin, and these are central nervous system depressants. Also in this group, Valium and Xanax. And then Adderall and anabolic androgenic steroids like Anadrol. So all of these are being abused. Either they give people a blissed out feeling, even when the pain is no longer the issue. It's just that they feel better in this artificially medically induced state, this opiate state, than they would without it. We have to start opening up centers around the United States to help people get off all of these opiates, either medications that are prescribed or the street variety. We could be helping probably 30 to 40 million Americans if we did that. And those are people who are really compromising their health because the side effects are the destruction of your entire immune system. You absolutely are going to die sooner if you take these. So these are only meant to be used for about a week or two at the most, and people are on these for years. So we should have a national campaign to discuss what we can do naturally to turn off pain in the body and what causes pain in the body. And most pain can be improved, relieved, or eliminated completely without any opiate at all. One other thing I mentioned, and that is a high-fat diet, that's your typical diet, increases a woman's risk of developing invasive breast cancer. That's according to a study at the National Cancer Institute and published in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute. And what they found is that that women getting more than 40% of their calories from fat had a 15% higher chance of developing breast cancer than women who only got 20%. You shouldn't be at 40% of calories from fat. That's way too much fat. But that's the amount of fat in the typical American diet. The pizzas, that's fat. Hamburgers, fat. Hot dogs, fat. And so we're getting all this unnecessary fat. The fats you should have are the healthy fats. They actually prevent cancer of the breast, including coconut oil, olive oil, flaxseed oil, almond oil, avocados. So those are the good fats. The bad fats, you're going to increase your risk of breast cancer. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I know you don't know what I'm going through. Standing here looking at you.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. We have a lot of program for you today. I just wanted to bring all of our Progressive Radio Network listeners up to date. From Friday, when we lost our server, and this has happened about 7 times, we did not lose the capacity to broadcast or to archive our programs because I had brought in some very smart young computer geeks and said, we've been hacked regularly. And we want to try to see who's doing it and how to prevent it. So they had created a system that prevented them from getting in and destroying and putting viruses into our archives or programs. That's great. But our outside independent server, they got to, and that crashed. And we were in the process of putting a brand new website up, an entirely new Progressive Radio Network website, with a whole lot of divisions, with the best independent progressive documentaries, hundreds of them, as well as articles and themes like a senior citizen, aging themes, teenage themes, women's themes, all types of special import information. So that didn't happen then, but now we have a new serving company with a new server. It'll take us about 5 days to completely finish the website. And you'll see it in progress and adding all new things. Yesterday, they managed to take us, or the day before, they managed to take us off the air through the internet. They found another way of doing it. Fine, we're back up, and we're in the process of getting a new internet server. So, interesting. We've kind of narrowed it down who we believe that is doing this, and on occasion it will happen. One more reason why you should always keep these phone numbers available, because according to the numbers, on Friday, when I wasn't able to do the show as I normally would, where you could hear it, but I was still broadcasting, people went to the site and listened, and the numbers were just huge. I mean, huge numbers. And that also occurred over the last couple of days. We're catching up on the archives today. But here's the number that you should always call. And there are a bunch of them. If one's overloaded, then go to the next and the next till you get a good line. Write this down and keep it. Now you know why it's so important you keep this number. 605-475-5151. Again, 605-475-5151. And then to go to the archives to download any of the programs I've done that you haven't listened to, you can listen over any portable listening device at 701-719-9976. This is to listen to the archives whenever you want, 24/7. You call this number and you can download my archive shows at 701-719-9976. So this way, you know, as things happen, you'll have everything you need. And we're hopeful that the people I've hired, and I've hired a bunch, these are very bright people. And already they've been able to protect the system and improve it. So a lot of good is happening there. Now, we're going to play you a clip from Elizabeth, from Richard Pryor. Listen to see if you can isolate what he says that I found so important in his statement.
What do you think that these executives are afraid you're going to do to white America?
Probably stop some racism.
Stop racism?
Yeah. They're probably afraid of that, because then people don't hate each other, and people start talking to each other, and then they start talking to each other, they find out who's the problem.
Which is?
Greedy people.
Greedy. I have a couple things I want to ask you there. Do you really think that some of the guys that you dealt with at NBC, no names, right? Because there's lawsuits for that, too. That some of these guys really want to promote racism actively, or is it a subconscious?
I just think it's part of capitalism, is to promote racism, right? In order to make things work. If you feel better because you're white and you can get a job, you use that. I mean, you know, I would.
Absolutely.
Say, I'm sorry, Jack, but shit, they say I'm white. I'm going to use this.
Right. Absolutely.
Get this job. I'm hungry, you know. But and that separates people. So they keep people separated, and that keeps them from thinking about the real problem. That's as simple as I see it. Probably it's not that simple, but.
Now, all right, you and I are about the same age, right? We're in our mid-30s. How long is it going to take before guys who think like you, and I say guys who think like me, people who don't want to have racism in the country, people who don't want to be oppressing any minority, whatever it is, sexual, whatever minority, really get into positions of power and can change things?
You can't get in a position of power, it seems, if you think like that. It seems that the only time you get in a position of power is if you like the people that are in power. To me, I mean, that's the way it goes. I mean, people that get to become executives become like the people that were already executives.
I don't know, maybe.
They go in with good intentions, but it eats them up. It's like a cesspool, you know, it just gets on you and it starts
eating. The system levels them.
Pretty soon it's all gone.
Is that what a cesspool sounds like?
Okay, you heard what he had to say. Did you catch the same thing I did? The takeaway message was, you're never going to get into a position of power if you would threaten those people and the institutions and the way they do business. So they're only going to bring people in who are just like them. And even if you think you'll make change, you won't, because they don't allow it. And hence the idea that Bernie Sanders is old enough that he should have known that the Democratic Party is so corrupt and has been corrupt for decades that it's not going to change. It's not going to disavow its connections with corporate America, including the different Wall Street and the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industries. It's not going to do that. So to entice people with the idea that we're really going to do something major, knowing full well the system doesn't change, ever. People may change, but there are always going to be carbon copies of policymakers like the ones before them. You hand the baton off to the next person, and there's unstated ethics. You do not threaten the status quo, ever. So I just thought that was interesting, and that was 30 years ago, that clip I just played. He had it right then. The same can be said for today. And I just want to share some thoughts in a moment from Chris Hedges, from the Courtiers of and the Tyrants from Truthdig, that ties us together. But before I do that, I want to play a clip from Elizabeth Warren yesterday, because there's two ways that we can look at this when she finishes. But let's wait to hear what she says.
Senator Warren.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stump, the Wells Fargo Vision and Values Statement, which you frequently cite, says, quote, "We believe in values live, not phrases memorized. If you want to find out how strong a company's ethics are, don't listen to what its people say. Watch what they do." So let's do that. Since this massive years-long scam came to light, you have said repeatedly, quote, "I am accountable." But what have you actually done to hold yourself accountable? Have you resigned as CEO or chairman of Wells Fargo?
The board, I serve at
the... Have you resigned?
No, I've not.
All right. Have you returned one nickel of the millions of dollars that you were paid while this scam was going on?
Well, first of all, this was by 1% of our people.
Not my question. My question, this is about responsibility. Have you returned one nickel of the millions of dollars that you were paid while this scam was going on?
The board will take care of that.
Have you returned one nickel of the money you earned while this scam was going on.
And the board will do...
I will take that as a no, then. Have you fired a single senior executive? And by that, I don't mean a regional manager or a branch manager. I'm asking about the people who actually led your community banking division or your compliance division.
We've made a change in our regional to lead our regional bank.
I just said I'm not asking about regional managers. I'm not asking about branch managers. I'm asking if you have fired senior management, the people who actually led community banking division, who oversaw this fraud, or the compliance division that was in charge of making sure that the bank complied with the law.
Carrie Toll said.
Did you fire
any
of those people? No. Okay. So you haven't resigned. You haven't returned a single nickel of your personal earnings. You haven't fired a single senior executive. Instead, evidently, your definition of accountable is to push the blame to your low-level employees who don't have the money for a fancy PR firm to defend themselves. It's gutless leadership. In your time as chairman and CEO, Wells has been famous for cross-selling, which is pushing existing customers to open more accounts. Cross-selling is one of the main reasons that Wells has become the most valuable bank in the world. Wells measures cross-selling by the number of different accounts a customer has with Wells. Other big banks average fewer than 3 accounts per customer, but you set the target at 8 accounts. Every customer of Wells should have 8 accounts with the bank. And that's not because you ran the numbers and found that the average customer needed 8 banking accounts. It is because, quote, 8 rhymes with great. This was your rationale right there in your 2010 annual report. Cross-selling isn't about helping customers get what they need. If it was, you wouldn't have to squeeze your employees so hard to make it happen. No, cross-selling is all about pumping up Wells' stock price, isn't it?
No, cross-selling is shorthand for deepening relationships. We only do well.
Let me stop you right there. You say no? No? Here are the transcripts of 12 quarterly earnings calls that you participated in from 2012 to 2014, the 3 full years in which we know this scam was going on. I'd like to submit them for the record, if I may, Mr. Chair. Thank you. These are calls where you personally made your pitch to investors and analysts about why Wells Fargo is a great investment. And in all 12 of these calls, you personally cited Wells Fargo's success at cross-selling retail accounts as one of the main reasons to buy more stock in the company. Let me read you a few quotes that you had. April 2012, quote, "We grew our retail banking cross-sell ratio to a record 5.98 products per household." A year later, April 2013, quote, "We achieved record retail banking cross-sell of 6.1 products per household." April 2014, quote, "We achieved record retail banking cross-sell of 6.17 products per household." The ratio kept going up and up. And it didn't matter whether customers used those accounts or not. And guess what? Wall Street loved it. Here is just a sample of the reports from top analysts in those years, all recommending that people buy Wells Fargo stock in part because of the strong cross-sell numbers. And I'd like to submit them for the record.
Without objections.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when investors saw good cross-sell numbers, they did while this scam was going on. That was very good for you personally, wasn't it, Mr. Stumpf? Do you know how much money, how much value your stock holdings in Wells Fargo gained while this scam was underway?
Well, first of all, it was not a scam. And cross-sell is a way of deepening relationships. When customers
through this, Mr. Stumpf. I asked you a very simple question. Do you know how much the value of your stock went up while this scam was going on?
It's all of my compensation is in our public.
Do you know how much it was?
It's all in the public filing.
Oh, you're right. It is all in the public records because I looked it up. While this scam was going on, you personally held an average of 6.75 million shares of Wells stock. The share price during this time period went up by about $30, which comes out to more than $200 million in gains, all for you personally, and thanks in part to those cross-sell numbers that you talked about on every one of those calls. You know, here's what really gets me about this, Mr. Stump. If one of your tellers took a handful of $20 bills out of the cash drawer, they'd probably be looking at criminal charges for theft. They could end up in prison. But you squeezed your employees to the breaking point so they would cheat customers and you could drive up the value of your stock and put hundreds of millions of dollars in your own pocket. And when it all blew up, you kept your job, you kept your multi-million dollar bonuses, and you went on television to blame thousands of $12 an hour employees who were just trying to meet cross-sell quotas that made you rich. This is about accountability. You should resign. You should give back the money that you took while this scam was going on, and you should be criminally investigated by both the Department of Justice and the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Okay, well said, and I certainly support her tenacity and the veracity of her concerns. Here's the problem. Nothing's going to happen to him. Nothing happened to Pat Paulson. Nothing happened to the head of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke. Nothing happened to his predecessor, when Alan Greenspan. Nothing ever happens at any of these committees where people are found grossly negligent, frequently have committed criminal acts, and no one gets hit with anything. Why? I think part of this is what Pam Martins and Russ Martins had to say in Wall Street on Parade. I'll quote it short, but it tells this story. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau announced that Wells Fargo was paying $185 million in fines and penalties for allowing its employees to open, quote, more than 2 million deposit credit card accounts that were not authorized by its customers. The employees were attempting to, quote, hit sales targets and receive bonuses. That's what they were talking about. In one of the most audacious forms of bank fraud, according to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and the employees transferred funds from customers' authorized accounts to temporarily fund new unauthorized accounts. This resulted in untold numbers of customers being charged for insufficient funds in their legitimate accounts or paying overdraft fees. If anyone ever doubted Senator Bernie Sanders when he repeatedly said during campaign stops that fraud had become a business model on Wall Street, that debate is over. According to the research, this conduct at Wells Fargo went on for 5 years. Yesterday, Fortune magazine, Stephen Gandel reported that the woman who headed up this division at Wells Fargo, Carrie Tolstick, will be walking away with $124.6 million in stock options to restrict Wells Fargo shares. Fraud is not only a business model, but a road to riches for the overlords of Wall Street. Just ask Sandy Well, John Paulson, Robert Rubin, John Reed, and Jamie Dimon. These are people who headed Wall Street banks. Fake accounts are just the latest alchemy on Wall Street. Let's not forget that Bernie Madoff was generating fake statements to thousands of clients showing $65 billion in fake money was in their accounts as the industry's top watchdog, the Securities and Exchange Commission, ignored the repeated warnings from whistleblower Harry Macopoulos for years. But Ponzi schemes are not the only source of fake money on Wall Street. Just consider how the Federal Reserve secretly funneled $13 trillion in cumulative below-market rate loans to some of the most hubristic banks on Wall Street and on foreign shores between 2007 and 2010. How did the Fed create that money without an appropriation from Congress? It simply pressed a button. Wall Street is able to sustain its business model of fraud because it has fake courts to hear cases brought by its customers and employees. Wall Street is the only industry in America which universally requires by written contract that its customers and employees agree to use its private justice system prior to opening an account or getting a job. That system, called mandatory arbitration, is overseen by Wall Street's crony self-regulator, FINRA, and offers none of the protections of the nation's taxpayer-funded courts, where juries are randomly selected from a broad base of the population, decisions are based upon case law, and higher courts can hear appeals. Then there are the fake regulators of Wall Street, who seamlessly move from their multi-million-dollar pay positions at corporate America and law firms to head the Securities Exchange Commission, the Justice Department, and on June 2nd last year, Senator Elizabeth Warren, who we just heard from, sent a letter to the Mary Jo White, Securities and Exchange Commission chair, listing her abysmal failures and conflicts of interest in doing the job of a tough cop on the beat. Wall Street on Parade has also repeatedly pointed out the impossible conflicts of Mary Jo White and her husband, John White, who between them have represented every major Wall Street firm in private practice. Last year, the New York Times reported that in a span of 2 years as head of the Securities and Exchange Commission, Mary Jo White had recused herself, that means you eliminate yourself because of conflict of interest, from more than four dozen enforcement investigations as a result of her conflicts or those of her husband. And yet the Obama administration ignores this untenable situation as serial crimes continue to pile up on Wall Street. The U.S. Justice Department under Attorney General Eric Holder, who served from February 2009 until the spring of 2015, was also a casebook study of conflict of interest. Both Holder and his head of the Justice Department's criminal division, Lanny Brewer, hailed from the corporate law firm Covington & Burling, which regularly represented the biggest Wall Street banks. This is how PBS program Frontline reported on the Holder-Brewer pursuit of justice on Wall Street following the largest financial crash and crime spree since the Great Depression. Narrator from Frontline spoke to two former high-level Justice Department prosecutors who served in the criminal division under Lanny Brewer. In their opinion, Brewer was overly fearful of losing. The commentator, Martin Smith, the producer, we spoke to a couple of sources from within the criminal division, and they report that when it came to Wall Street, there were no investigations going on. There were no subpoenas, no document reviews, no wiretaps. Lanny Brewer. Well, I don't know who you spoke with because we have looked very hard at the very types of matters that you're talking about. Martin Smith, quote, these sources said that at the weekly indictment approval meetings, there was no case ever mentioned. Ever that was even close to indicting Wall Street for financial crimes. Both Holder and Brewer, by the way, returned to their high-paying jobs at Covington and Burling after leaving the Justice Department. The law firm kept a corner office waiting for Holder's return. And despite their tenure at the Justice Department, not one single criminal case was brought against a major Wall Street bank or its top executives for crimes related to the 2008 crash, the top of the U.S. economy. So the takeaway message for me is this. Elizabeth Warren could also bring in every single military industrial complex contractor and do the same thing. Did you get a contract, a no-bid contract? And how did you get that no-bid contract for $1 billion? And who in your company now used to work in the Defense Department? Which general, which admiral who greenlit it and walked back into the place where they formerly were top officer and got people to say yes to your program? Which retired senator or representative was heading this and gave a green light to it? And also, we understand that you bid a contract for $1 billion, but you're now at $3 billion, and virtually all this overrun is paid for by the American people. And each year you keep giving yourself bonuses, huge bonuses. Now, she also could say, is that ethical? The American public is paying you for your incompetency, for your ability to deal inside the Beltway with 200,000 of the companies that are all politically and economically connected. Shouldn't you return that money? And still, she could ask a more fundamental question. Why do we need all these military and contractors? We already produce more arms, more state-of-the-art weaponry than all the other countries of the world combined. Russia, China, India, United Kingdom, Brazil. We outdo them all. So this idea that somehow we're going to be better with a candidate that promises to spend more on military spending, how many people donated to their presidential are Boeing, Raytheon, Hewlett Packard, how many? Because these are the people who know how to play the game. It's all corrupt at every level in Washington. And also, how is it that $180 million, that's one day's income for Wells Fargo? We don't talk about what it means when you're too big to fail and nobody goes to jail. And that's what America has become. Controlled by monolithic corporations instead of the small mom-and-pop companies. Tomorrow I'm going to deal in depth with who really helps Americans. It's the small businesses. I'll give you the numbers, and you'll be surprised. It's not the government. It's not the Fortune 500 companies. It's not Silicon Valley. It's the small companies, and the largest number are home-based businesses, by the way. So it's all just for show. It's so in her next election campaign, she can have a clip that can show her getting tough. Well, we've had thousands of these getting tough speeches, making people sweat for that moment in the spotlight. Then everything goes back the way it always has been and always will be, because we're not changing the system. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Raindrops, so many raindrops, it feels like raindrops falling from my eyes, falling from my eyes.
Now, in just a moment, we're going to hear from a 20-year insider, a person who was the personal consultant, advisor to both Hillary and Bill Clinton, and he has some interesting insight into her character that the public will never know about and wouldn't see. But before then, I just want to mention that we have a product that I've created. We're going to offer it at a special sale price. The money goes to the Progressive Radio Network. It's called Digestive Stuff. Look, we wouldn't have digestive problems the way we have today if we took our time eating, but we don't. If we ate in the right combination of foods, but we don't. If we ate the right amount at a meal, so we could still get up and feel that we could eat some more, but we gorge ourselves. We're even eating, the latest study showed that more Americans are eating more meat than ever before in our history, and larger portions. We only have about 2% of the public that are vegans, and only 4% are vegetarians. So we're eating a lot of food that takes a lot of difficulty in digestion. We're eating a lot of foods that have no fiber. That really plays havoc with your intestine. And almost all the food that we eat, if you're the average person, is a pro-inflammatory food. It causes inflammation, contributing to ileitis, colitis, spastic colon, ulcers. And we're drinking a lot of beverages with our meals, which over-dilutes the gastric acids. So the answer to that is take your time. Relax when you eat. Put on some soothing music. Don't distract yourself. Just be present with your food. Chew your food thoroughly. Your grandmother was right. Chew your food 20 times each bite. Don't drink before a meal. Wait till after the meal. Have portion sizes and always get up when you could eat more. Graze throughout the day instead of having one big meal. And that way you're going to be eating healthier, eating more locally grown organic food, eating a plant-based diet, more fiber. All of that promotes health. Good digestion, assimilation, utilization, and elimination. Now, on top of that, I've created something that we should pay attention to. It's called digestive stuff. It's a delicious tasting, pineapple tasting powder, like green stuff, red stuff. And you, what you do is, hey, this, the ideal way is this. You make yourself a digestive stuff, a smoothie in the morning. Let's say you take apple juice and put a scoop of this in there. That's all you do. Nothing more. Don't add anything. Just a glass, 16-ounce glass of apple juice. But then after every meal that day, take yourself maybe 3 ounces of digestive juice, drink it down. All right? You only make it once a day, one scoop, and then you drink a little bit throughout the day. By the end of the day, you've drank it all, but after a meal. Why is this so important? And there's nothing else like it I could find in the world. Because I know what the body needs. I know what facilitates optimal digestion. Everything I just mentioned, but I also add in papaya, pineapple, apple, banana, bromelain, amylase, lipase, protease, cellulase, ginger, cinnamon, anise, fennel, whole leaf aloe vera, marshmallow, slippery elm, 6 billion probiotics, 6 billion probiotics from a different source. That's 12 billion probiotics, and stevia as a sweetener and pineapple natural flavor. And that's it. That's all that's in here. There's nothing like it. And it takes a while to get your digestion right. So if you use the advice I suggested, and then after each meal, take yourself about 3 ounces, drink it down. It's a nice, take your favorite beverage, add your favorite beverage with one scoop in the morning, and then throughout the day, you have lunch, take 3 ounces. Have a mid-afternoon, take 3 ounces. In the evening, after a meal, take 3 ounces, drink it down, and see how you feel after a month. It's on sale. You're getting a nice discount. Call this number, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065 for digestive stuff, something new, something important, and something an awful lot of people could benefit from along with the other advice that I gave. Now let's hear from one of the four people who were the closest to the Clintons for the longest period of time, so they really know them. This is just to give you something other than the New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, NBC media profile of Hillary Clinton as a woman who deserves the presidency because it's her turn. They know nothing about and never allow any critical insight into her nature, her character, and what we don't see is who she is behind the scenes, who she really is. This gives you some understanding of that.
I'd like today to tell the inside story, the real story, about how Hillary Clinton came to be corrupt. Because when I knew her and when I worked for her, she wasn't totally corrupt. There were some corners she cut in Whitewater, and she certainly got a $100,000 bribe from the futures cattle market trading. But, you know, compared to what she subsequently made, that was peanuts. The story starts that when Clinton was beginning to leave the White House and preparing for his departure, he got hit with some unpleasant news, which was that he was going to lose his law license in Arkansas because of the Paula Jones litigation and his perjury in it. And the Clintons did not have much money saved up. He was living really on the perks of the presidency, but on his $400,000 a year paycheck. And Hillary and Bill became addicted to the perks of luxury, to the bubble that they lived in. My wife describes it as a bubble in our book Armageddon, how Trump can beat Hillary. Free everything and airplanes at your disposal and limos whenever you want them and staff to do anything you want and free everything. And she and Bill, 10 years in the Arkansas governor's mansion, 8 years in the White House, became addicted to it. It became something that was essential to their lives. Bill was never like that. And Hillary always wanted money for future security, but she certainly wasn't materialistic herself. Then, when they saw that they were going to leave the White House and not be able to practice law, they hit on a new career. bribery. And Hillary described herself as dead broke in that interview. Well, psychologically, she was afraid of being dead broke. They had a huge book contract, but Bill was disbarred. So they decided on a career of bribery. And originally the career was that people would pay Bill bribes for deregulating the banks. In 1999 and in 2000, he signed legislation that he had always opposed and had always told me he would never sign, deregulating the big banks. And in return, right after he left office, he got a $125,000 speaking fee from Morgan Stanley 2 weeks after he left the White House. May not sound like much in light of their subsequent winnings, but hey, he was being paid $400 a year as president, and $125 was a good piece of change. And he was off to the races at that point. And bank after bank came in and gave him speaking fees, gave her some speaking fees, but mainly him, because she was limited in the Senate. And he happily pocketed them. Then, as speculation mounted that Hillary would run for president in 2004 and 2005, the bribes increased, the speaking fees went up, and they set up the Clinton Foundation so that the veneer of charity, the pretense of charity, and some good works marginally thrown in to make it look good, could become a major bribery-receiving vehicle. And between the speaking fees and the Clinton Foundation, they really put together some serious change. When Hillary lost the race for president, it seemed like they were set back, but then when she got Secretary of State, they were off to the races again. And they now had something to sell, access to the Secretary of State. So they went global, and Bill traveled all over the world, meeting with foreign leaders, allegedly giving speeches for fees, but in fact the fees were bribes, and the contributions to the Clinton Foundation were bribes for favorable treatment in the State Department. And then after she left state and she became a likely candidate for president, the bribes have continued. Now, the essential to bribery is cover-up. And therefore, they made a decision at the very beginning that they would not use official servers, but would use private servers, both in the Senate and as Secretary of State, because they needed to be able to erase the bribery's fingerprints and footprints. They needed to be able to go back and clean up their act so they wouldn't get caught. And that was the reason for the private server. If in the process she endangers national security and puts our innermost secrets out there for the Chinese and Russians to hack, well, I'm sorry, that's just a cost of doing business. The important point was that she could not be accused of bribery because the smoking gun would be erased by the email erasure. So that's how it happened. That's why and how she became and he became a racketeering organization. This marriage that began as a romance, became a partnership in the 90s, became a RICO, a racketeering organization, in this last decade and a half. Now, this story has really never been told, and the media will never cover it. So please make this go viral. Put this all over the place, because we need to understand this historical background.
That will give you an idea of someone who was close to them for a long time, for 20 years. There was also someone who was close to them when they first started, and we will try to get his input. What it shows me is that these are people who are motivated by power, as many people who seek to be politicians or head of corporations are. And therefore, along the way, no matter what their original ideals, they start saying about the comforts that accumulate to you when you can say yes to things, when you can greenlight projects, when you can change legislation. And we always defer to power in our society, which instead of challenging it, which is unfortunate. So behind all of the political speeches, behind all of the nice statements to the public about we're going to do this for you, at the end of the day, they don't. They do whatever they do for themselves or those that they support. And those are the oligarchs. Those are the top, let's say the top 5% of Americans. And none of that trickles down to the rest. Just some thoughts. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And by the way, this Saturday, 3 to 6 p.m., for the Health Support Group, our final meeting, and I'll be doing two original lectures, an hour each, at that time. Have a nice day, everyone.